Blog Talk Radio.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, I bear witness that there is no God but Allah, and I bear witness that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad is indeed his messenger, and I further bear witness that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is our divine reminder, leader, teacher, and guide in our midst, and it is my distinct honor, privilege, and pleasure to greet all of you once again in our nation's greeted words of peace. As-salamu alaykum.
Well,
and welcome back. Thank you, Queen. And welcome back to our Tuesday night program, Disaster Preparedness, with our hosts, Brother Rudolph T. Muhammad and Sister Lachelle Muhammad. And Brother Rudolph is going to join us later along with some other distinguished panelists. So for right now, we're going to hear from our beloved sister and queen from our own Mecca in Detroit, Muhammad Mosque number one, Sister Lachelle Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. How is my beautiful sister?
All praises due to Allah by his grace and permission that I'm here, so I'm happy, sis.
I know that's right. praise to Allah. We are definitely blessed to be together and have an opportunity to share. So let me open up properly as well in the most holy name of Allah. I thank Allah for this opportunity. I thank His Christ and I thank His divine reminder for the opportunity to share with our people information that will help them and help us, because, you know, there's an old saying that says you teach what you need to learn. You're best at teaching what you need to learn. So I want to teach today. Brother Rudolph had chosen the topic for us to do a part two of the diabetes piece. So there's, you know, of course, type one and type two, and he talked about both of those types last week, and I'm not going to recap everything he said because they can go and get the archives of the show. And I'm sure anybody who saw part two, you know, was in the header today, probably thought, let me go and see what was part one. So I'm just going to do a brief recap, and then we're going to move into some of the other things that happen if your diabetes goes unaffected. Because a problem that we have among people is, and I'm not going to even just say black people, but among people in general, because I work with cross-sections of community, I don't just work with black people, is that people don't want to go to the doctor. They're afraid if they go to the doctor, he's going to tell them something wrong. And I always think that's funny when people say, if I go to the doctor, he's going to just tell me something wrong and I don't want to hear no bad news. As if the news is not true and he doesn't say it. You know, if you think you have high blood sugar, you know, if you eat a dinner, you know, that's high in carbohydrates, fats, proteins, you know, because they call it sugar, but it's other things that cause the rise in our sugar, like too much pasta, potatoes, it's other foods, these carbohydrates, spaghetti, the kind of things that long-distance runners and football players need to eat. Well, back in the day when we worked on the farm, we could eat those things. We burned them off. We were out working. We, you know, cleaning floors by hand. And, you know, the women were in the house or even sometimes in the field, and you worked more physical so you could eat these things. But now we're sedentary people sitting up eating a plate of spaghetti and watching television and going to bed, and it's causing us problems. So the fats and proteins and those carbohydrates, you know, these nutrients cause the glucose, which turns, which is, you know, the scientific term for sugar, which is how it gets its nickname, sugar diabetes. But I don't want anyone to think, well, I don't eat, you know, a lot of cake, so I probably don't have diabetes. That doesn't mean that. You can never eat cakes, cookies, and you could still have diabetes. What? But they call it sugar, right? But there are other things that create sugar, and we're going to make sure that we get into the piece of what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad definitely taught on diabetes. And by God's permission, a lot of sisters are studying more and more on it, but I need the men to get on board with this high levels of sugar in the blood. So these glucose, it enters the blood cells, and the blood cells would normally help in the production of a hormone called insulin, as Brother Rudolph told us last week, which acts like a gatekeeper. You know, the insulin, your body's natural insulin, which is created in your pancreas, as Brother Rudolph went over last week, it is like a gatekeeper, and it kind of regulates your sugar. Well, if there's something going on with that natural insulin production, then you'll have problems with your body processing foods that are turned into sugar. For example, my mother, at about 50 years of age, woman who was fit, you know, weighed properly by her size, height, you know, bone structure, everything, weighed properly, was diagnosed in her 50s with diabetes. And we thought this is very odd. My mother was a nutritionist by trade. She went to school for that. She worked as a nutritionist in the hospital. So we thought it was very odd that my mother, of all people, was popping with diabetes. You know, little thing that she was, but her doctor was sure. He did the test, and he was 100% sure that she had diabetes. So she began to take insulin because it was so, you know, going off the charts. He said she needed to take insulin injections into her abdomen in order to get it regulated. So she started, of course, watching even more of what she ate so that she could get off the insulin. Well, turns out the doctor, he was right, but he was wrong, which is why it's always good to get second opinions. He told her she had diabetes because of where she fell on the glucose scale. She was not a diabetic. Turns out she had pancreatic cancer.
So the cancer, which you would have had a two-year heads up on, because for 2 years she was treated as a diabetic, if she had gotten a second opinion, but even though none of the signs matched except family history, and she went along with trusting her doctor and not getting a second opinion, she really had the beginning stages of pancreatic cancer. But by the time, you know, she was up in these insulin injections and found out, oh, my goodness, I don't have diabetes. I have extreme pain in my side. I need to find out what this is. They looked to see what the pain was. She had a growth, which it turned out to be pancreatic cancer, and the cancer had wrapped itself around her pancreas like tentacles, they said. And so there was no way to get the cancer off and save the patient. So I'm not going to go off into her medical treatment for that. Needless to say, she didn't have diabetes. So if you're doing all the right things and your diabetes is still unregulated, I would definitely suggest that you go and get a second opinion. It does not hurt your doctor's feelings. And even if it did, who cares? You know, go get a second opinion. If one doctor says, well, your family history, your grandmama had it, your auntie, you know, this one, that one, all these people had diabetes, that doesn't mean you have to have it just because of the family history. It's not hereditary like a brown eyes and brown hair. Type 2 diabetes is not. Type 1 maybe so. Type 2 is hereditary because of lifestyle. Your mother cooks potatoes and rice and spaghetti and may be overweight because of that. You turn around and cook it for your children. They're not active enough, and they can develop diabetes due to lifestyle choices, not necessarily a physiological heredity pattern. Could just be the way your family, how they take care of themselves. So it's possible, it's very possible, and most doctors will tell you, the great majority of doctors will tell you that the first thing to do if you have diabetes, they'll tell you, well, let's get you to lose a little weight. They want you to lose a little weight. No matter what size you are, they're going to say lose a little weight. And then secondary, they're going to say, let's change what you eat. Because if you just can change what you eat, and if you're able to lose a little weight, just do a little walking. It doesn't have to be anything, you know, extreme. So we think we have to go and run a triathlon in order to lose weight. You know, so little things, and it might take time. You might know you lost 5 pounds, and no one else can tell. You may know you lost 20 pounds, but no one else can tell. It doesn't have to be that they can tell. You know, a healthy way to lose the weight, most doctors will say, is about a half a pound a week. So no one's going to notice for a while that you've lost some weight. And even if you lose 20 pounds, they may not notice it, because if you lose it slowly over time and they see you every day, they're not going to notice the changes. Well, today I kind of wanted to morph the conversation into what things are affected when we do not handle our diabetes. I thought of a caller that called in or messaged in to our dear sister last week, and he had asked a question about some things that are affected by diabetes, and I wanted to make sure that we covered some of that. So, you know, looking at your body mass index, one of the major factors for type 2 diabetes is obesity, 20% or more of one's normal body weight, and a lack of exercise or absence of physical activity, putting the muscles to use in order to keep fit. So you want to make sure you look to lose a few pounds. That'll help you. Every little bit helps. Every little bit helps. Now, one of the first things that's affected by diabetes is your eyes. I don't know why that is, but it's the eyes usually are affected. And one thing, if you're a diabetes patient, when you go in for your eye exams, your doctor will tell you to go get eye exams. They're going to tell you to get foot exams. People hear that all the time. Because if you nick your foot, you don't heal as well when you're diabetic. And they always hear about this one auntie from St. Louis who lost her foot because she had sugar. Well, that's real. But they also want to check your eyes, because when an ophthalmologist, not an optometrist, not at America's Best Eye Institute, there's nothing wrong with America's Best or Walmart, but you need sometimes to go to an ophthalmologist, not an optometrist. There are other testing, not that the optometrist might not be able to do them, but your doctor will normally send you to an ophthalmologist so that he can look and see if your eyes are deteriorating. If your sugars are out of whack, too long, too high, or too low, both are dangerous, the doctor will need to see if this is affecting your vision. Most diabetics will tell you, they might say, my vision is a little blurry if their sugars are too low or too high. Sometimes they'll say, you know, they feel dizzy, but sometimes it's the blurry vision that gives them that dizzy effect. So you want to sit them still and then say, what do you see? I want to read something from the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, because I never want to go too far into anything without touching base to what we know to be actual facts. And, of course, those are always the words of our dear messenger. So the Honorable Elijah Muhammad says in How to Eat to Live, Book 1, if you have your official Nation of Islam copy, you can go to NOI.org, go to Final Call Store, FCN Store, and you can buy these books. They're like $5, $10. None of the books are very expensive, but the weight that they hold is very great. So if you have your official copy, if you went out and bought it last week after listening to Brother Rudolph, How to Eat to Live, Book 1, page 3031, I'm going to quote the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and he said, sugar diabetes can be controlled and cured if you only eat correctly. Stay off sugar and starchy foods and leave those old white potatoes alone. Do not eat spaghetti and macaroni at every meal. If you are overweight, do not eat any meal. Don't eat at any meal. And if you want to live a long time, do not eat at any meal. Such foods such as spaghetti and macaroni are processed, not cooked thoroughly, and are hard to digest. And that's from How to Eat to Live, Book 1, pages 30 and 31. And those are the words of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. We're going to be quoting him, of course, again as we move forward. So we want to look at the eyes. That's something that's affected and tends to be affected first. I don't know exactly why that is. It's probably because of the progression of the sugar stores. Different things can be affected with different people. I know one of your callers, his concern was something else. You know, was it caused any sexual dysfunction? Everything, every organ is affected when any organ is put under stress. So if the pancreas is under stress, everything else is going to be put under stress. You have to, your body is a well-oiled machine, and everything is interdependent. Even though it may seem independent, every part is interdependent. And so you want to always be aware that something you might think as simple as not taking your metformin pills for your diabetes or not taking your insulin shots for your diabetes. And you're thinking, well, I missed one, it's okay. Every time you miss one and throw your sugars further out of range, you risk affecting something else. Another thing I want to say is, even with a diabetes patient, if they say they're not feeling well and they tell you maybe they didn't eat with their medication and their sugar, they think their sugar may be low. If you do not have the ability to test their sugar, do not go give them some orange juice. Don't do that. If you're not sure that that's what it is, don't try to fix it in ways that you're not sure. You know, that person knows that when they take 1,000 milligrams of metformin that they should eat, then they should have brought a snack with them, made sure that you let them make that decision. Because if you make a medical call to just go and get somebody some orange juice and it really wasn't a problem, you could cause a bigger problem. So be careful trying to make a quick fix when someone tells you it's their sugar. I also wanted to read one more piece from How to Eat to Live, Book 1, and then if there are any callers in queue, we can definitely move forward with that. On How to Eat to Live, Book 1, page 49 and 50, it says, in regards to you who suffer from sugar diabetes, fasting and staying away from sugar and starchy foods is far better than having your limbs cut off your body because of your foolish carelessness in eating sweets and starchy foods all the times of the day. Cut out that sugar. Do not use any at all. Use honey, but not the whole bottle at one time. If you have too much sugar in your blood, be careful not to eat any sugar of any kind until you get it out. Some doctors will tell you that you have low sugar. Just tell them that you will have high life in you. Do not eat any potatoes, beans, and bread. Eat vegetables. You may eat chicken if it's raised away from filth. And that is, again, that's a quote from the book of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, How to Eat to Live, Book 1, all the pages 49 and 50. And if you want to go and purchase that book again, you can go to NOI.org and then go to Final Call Store, and you can order the book for yourself so that you can read it in its entirety. Do we have anyone, any callers in queue? Sister?
Yes, ma'am. We have a lot of people on the phone, but there are no questions from the phone lines yet. But let me allow them to get the instruction that if you have a question or a comment, press 1 on your dial pad. And we do have a couple of questions in the chat room, Sister Lachelle. So whenever you're
okay.
ready. Okay, we have a question from Sharon, and she says, what foods should you eat when you become diabetic?
All praises due to Allah. Thank you. Thank you, Sister Sharon, for your question. That is a great question, and there are foods that are good for you and foods that are not as good for you, but anything that's overdone is going to cause you a problem. So you want to be careful not to overdo it anything. You don't want to say, well, I'm only going to eat, you know, raw celery. Well, that's going to cause you another problem with your digestion. You can't just keep eating all that raw celery. It's going to have you going to the bathroom more than you might want to. So you want to, you can't do anything over the top. You want to do everything definitely in moderation. But as the messenger says, you want to be sure to go more into vegetables than you are into other things. You want to limit your bread. You want to make sure that you cut out pasta. Pasta is so not good for us. It's not good for us, especially, I mean, not good for us, period, to be eating processed food. It's not natural, but it's definitely not good for us, those of us who have diabetes. You want to use, and if you do get pasta, like if I get pasta, I might go out and buy some spinach pastas or something that's not as processed. If you just need it, I mean, sometimes with vegetarians, they use stuff like rice and pastas as fillers. You have to find another filler. You know, rice and pasta and potatoes are not good fillers. Well, I'm a vegetarian, and I use the potatoes so that the meal is more filling. Yeah, but what are you filling yourself with? It's not a good idea. I want to read a little bit more from How to Eat to Live. This is from Book 2. Sugar diabetes can be controlled by eating the proper food in such a way that you will never know that you ever had it and you will never see any sign of it. But you must not continue to pour into your body, pour in the body, power and strength from sugar from your meals and add sugar spilling over your body. Naturally, it's going to reach out for something. It's going to go into the blood itself after putting too much sugar and starch in the body. But some of us are built upon eating what we want and just cannot abstain from eating these starchy and sweet foods. These things are nothing but friends to sugar diabetic condition. Stay away from it and you will live longer. But diabetes is an evil enemy. It is an enemy to both the flesh and bone of the body. You want to, as it says here in this reading, you want to limit those things. I would say cut them down to zero, but you have to do it in stages. So let's say you use potatoes or rice in meals 5 times a week, then cut back to 4, then cut back to 3. Because if you cut it out immediately, say, I'm not doing any more today. Those of you who do have diabetes in your bodies, or those of you whose bodies are addicted to these foods, there's food addiction. You know, we think of cocaine, we think of gambling, we even think of smoking, but sometimes we don't acknowledge food addiction. Your body is craving those foods because maybe you have a precursor to diabetes. You're going to have to wean yourself off those foods like you'd have to wean yourself off of any other drug. Food is a drug. So one good food that's really good for you is asparagus. I know some people say, I don't like asparagus, Sister Lachelle. And I would say you probably didn't have it prepared properly. So asparagus is good. Those green vegetables, you know how they told you when you were little, eat your green vegetables? Well, they are very good for you. So asparagus, broccoli, those green vegetables, they are your friend. Now, you can do, of course, bean soup. If you know how to prepare navy bean soup, Sister Sharon and whoever else may have had this question, that's good for you. But you don't want to do beans and rice. See, some of us will mix, you know, do red beans and rice or do navy beans even and add rice. You got to pull back off the rice. And even the navy bean soup, do 1 cup of soup and let that be enough. You don't have to pull the whole crock pot up to you with the ladle and clear the pot of bean soup. You know, everything, we want to do it in moderation. But steamed asparagus with the lemon butter is a recipe I'm looking at right now from my MGT cookbook, and that's a great recipe. Broccoli, any of the green leafy vegetables are always good. And you can mix in some others for color. Something that I do love to serve for Sister Sharon, a good one, is the white cabbage, and then get some red, you know, bell pepper and green bell pepper. and cut them up and mix them in that at the end after you cook the cabbage down, then add the peppers. The added burst of color makes it more appetizing. So those are the kind of foods that I would suggest to our sister.
Okay, yes, ma'am.
All praises to Allah. Okay, and we have a question from Joshetta. She says, does diabetes cause difficulty with extremities, like heaviness and tingling in your legs and feet?
Wow, excellent question. Definitely, that could be a side effect of diabetes. Of course, none of this can be certain until you go and see a physician, either a holistic doctor or a regular medical doctor or even a nurse practitioner. You have to go and have your personal blood work done, your personal testing done. This show, or myself, nor Brother Rudolph, or anyone who comes on here, you cannot replace the you sitting down, knee to knee with your physician. You absolutely have to do that. There's nothing I can tell you about your individual case, because you may have some other things that are going on with you. But that can happen with diabetics, especially that tingling in the feet. There's a condition that happens over time with uncontrolled diabetes, that the foot will start to get pain. Even the legs, you'll get these shooting pains, and that's diabetic neuropathy setting in. So some diabetics will say their feet and legs hurt so bad, and you'll be thinking, well, maybe that's because they walked a lot today. But, you know, you walk the same amount they did, and you're not in as much pain. They're in almost debilitating pain. They may even have to have someone help them walk. I mean, it can get that bad. It starts off with the tingling, and it can definitely progress to pain, and with all your lower extremities, because keep in mind, when your body's fighting something, it's going to conserve energy. Where does it conserve from? Those lower extremities. Your body's like, we got to save the core. The heart is here. Our organs are here. We're going to save the core, the brain, and all the other extremities, arms, feet, legs, toes, they'll get the least amount of energy. Even if you were suffering from hypothermia, your body will conserve down to that core. But, of course, you have to go see your doctor or whoever you may be asking for. They need to go see their doctor to be sure that that's what they're suffering from. Thank you, Sister Queen. That was a great question you selected.
Yes, ma'am. All praises to Allah. Okay, we're going to go to the phone lines. We're going to go a little back and forth. So, area code 443, your mic is now live.
Assalamualaikum.
Wa alaikum salam,
ma'am. This is Sister Miyoshi from Baltimore.
Oh, praise be to Allah, Sister Miyoshi. Thank you for calling in. And did you hear that last question that came up about diabetes?
About the tingling in the hand, in the extremities?
Yeah.
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely.
That is
definitely
very scary.
Yes,
very
ma'am.
Scary.
But I wanted to respond to the question about foods to eat. You had mentioned
yes.
not eating pasta and potatoes and certain vegetables that were really good. I wanted to talk about cauliflower and how cauliflower can be used as a substitute for pasta and potatoes. There's lots of recipes that use cauliflower for, like, cauliflower and cheese, cauliflower salad, made like potato salad, cauliflower, mashed cauliflower. And cauliflower has lots of nutritional value. It's an excellent vegetable. It's one that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad even said was an excellent vegetable in Hadith to Live, Book 1. So I wanted to make sure I mentioned cauliflower.
You know,
really
and
good.
The thing with the cauliflower and for potato salad, I had somebody, I hate to use the word, but the word is apropos for this. They tricked me into eating that cauliflower salad under the guise that it was potato salad. And I have to say, this sister, as my mother would say, her Mississippi way, put her foot in that cauliflower salad. I knew it wasn't potatoes, but I couldn't figure out what it was, but it was so good, you know. And we have to remember there are other seasonings in the cabinet besides salt and pepper. There are other things in the cabinet besides salt and pepper. And she hooked that cauliflower up. And it was really, really good, I have to say. And I love potato salad more than I should. But definitely it was an excellent. It was very good. You know, sometimes somebody will say, well, try this. It tastes just like chicken. Well, no, it didn't taste like chicken. I knew it wasn't potato salad, but it was very good. And we do have to find taste-good alternatives. You can't feed somebody cardboard every night and say, but it's good for you. Might
exactly.
be, but I don't want it. you know, food is a spiritual experience for Black people. You know, it's more than just sustenance. You know, we're not going to eat a rice dream, you know, and rice treats every night and be happy, or, you know, granola every night and be happy, and water. We're not, that doesn't work for us. We like, it's the smell, it's the taste, it's the texture, it's the community, it's all of that. And I do agree that cauliflower salad is good. Do you have a good cauliflower salad recipe, Sister Miyoshi?
Yes, ma'am, I do. I have a few recipes, cauliflower recipes. Where would you like for me to send them?
Send them to Care Unit Detroit, 911@live.com. Care Unit Detroit, 911@live.com. And anyone who wants her fabulous recipe can email that same address and just put in the subject bar that you want the cauliflower salad recipe, and I will send it right out to you. So you email that in to me, and I'll send it out. You said, whose is it?
I said they should absolutely try my cauliflower and cheese recipe. It's made like macaroni and cheese.
Oh, really? Now, see,
yes,
I've got the cheesy, wheezy squash one from a dear sister in Detroit. I'm not going to put her name out because I didn't ask her permission in advance. But that cheesy, wheezy squash, I'm telling you, you'll be all right with it. I mean, it's so good that when we sell it at bake auctions in the mosque, it's like a fighting frenzy. It's so good. So tell us about your macaroni and cheese substitute. What do you call it?
Cauliflower and cheese. Baked cauliflower and cheese.
Do you bake it? Okay.
It's baked, just like macaroni and cheese. The recipe is almost exactly the same, except you have to make sure that the cauliflower isn't watery and that you drain it really well before you put it into the pan, because you don't want to have too much excess water in the mixture, because then it won't cook up right and the cheese will be weird. I don't know how else to describe it, but it just won't come out right.
Now, how many different cheeses do you use in your recipe? How many different cheeses do you use?
It depends on my mood, but most of the time I use at least two. I like sharp and mild cheddar together.
See, that's not what I usually do. So I'm going to try that. There's nothing like taking a recipe your family thinks they know how this is going to turn out and switching it up. Because I do cabbage. I love cabbage, and I do cabbage a lot. And then I learned a different recipe in my class, and I cooked that recipe, but I didn't warn my family that I did a different recipe. And when they started eating, they were like, wait a minute. That's not the way you usually do it, is it? I was like, but what do you think? Do you like it? Or you don't like it, and they really did like it. So sometimes it's fun, even if you have a recipe that you know is tried and true, to switch it up. And we want to eat to live, not live to eat. So, yes, eating is fun, and it's an experience, but we don't want someone to die. You know, I think about that clip in Soul Food when they realized that the food that they were cooking every Sunday, you know, was taking grandma out of there. You know, they love their grandma, but did they love her enough to change how they eat? So we want to make sure we make some healthy changes. Do you have any other suggestions, Sister Miyoshi?
Not food suggestions, but I called in a few minutes into the show, so I'm not sure if you talked about exercise. I did want to say that exercise and keeping your body moving so that your circulation stays optimal, you know, really is important. For helping to minimize the sugar in your blood or utilize the sugar that's in your bloodstream, because sugar is energy and you need it. And if you don't use it, and if your cells aren't working efficiently, you know, so that it can utilize the sugar that's in your body, then you need to move so that it can burn off.
Absolutely. And it doesn't, and as I said when we first opened the show, but it's good to repeat, because just like you didn't hear the first 5 minutes of the show, someone else may not. And I love how the Honorable Elijah Muhammad uses repetition. If you get any of his books, by the end of that book, you're going to be clear on everything that was discussed, because he's going to work it back in until he knows that you have it. And so we're going to do the same. We're going to do the same. It's successful. Yes, and you 15 minutes. Like I tell everybody, start small. I'm not going to tell you to go and join a dear sister of mine would tell me about this fabulous workout. It's an hour and a half at a gym. You may not have an hour and a half, or you may not want to, if you're at home alone, say an hour and a half, I don't know about that, Sister Michelle, but 15 minutes, I can get that out of you. Because just think, on your lunch break, the worst lunch break in the world is 30 minutes. I mean, at least you got 30 minutes, you know, maybe two 15-minute breaks in that 30-minute lunch, and some places don't let you put it all the way together and do the whole hour. So if you gave me 15 minutes, gave yourself 15 minutes out of your 30-minute lunch hour, you went and walked, that might save you from eating that double Whopper with cheese with your coworker. That might save you from, you know, getting those processed chicken nuggets at Wendy's and cutting them up on a salad that's full of iceberg lettuce that has zero nutritional value. It might save you from going to stand in that line, because the other 15 minutes you will use to stand in that line, you won't have it, because you'll be trying to walk back to work. So that's what I have some of my coworkers doing with me. We'll walk 15 minutes away from the job. Now we got to get back to work. So what they end up getting, they thought they were getting 15, but they really were getting 30. But sometimes if you walk together with a coworker, you can talk, you can laugh, and that's good, because it makes sure you're breathing, and you need oxygen to burn calories. If you're holding your breath half the time you're working out and wondering why it's not working, ding, you got to breathe.
Yes.
Not to make you go faint, but you have to breathe. So doing it with a friend is always an excellent idea, to have somebody to talk to. Headphones, a lot of the gyms you go in now, the TV is playing, they got videos on, news shows. So that's, but you may not can't afford a gym, but you can walk 15 minutes, you know, to the mailbox. Or a little trick that sisters used to always share who were teaching classes, park further back in the parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
Now, don't park
mm-hmm.
in the dark. I'm talking about when you're in the daytime. Don't put your life in danger and you running around the car from the mugger. But park further out and walk up. Don't find that space closest to the door. Don't use your grandmama's handicap sticker to hang from the rearview mirror so you can park at that first spot. Park a little further back and go on and walk up, and every step counts. Get a pedometer. Count your steps so you can see how many steps that you walk in a day, and you might be more active than you think. So if you're walking more steps in a work day than you think, then you may need to add that extra exercise. Because I hear people say all the time, I walk all day at work. Well, if you still have high blood sugar, you're not walking enough at work. So I'm going to need you to walk in some of your off time to compensate for your sedentary time that's working against you. Or maybe you're walking in and got snacks in your pocket. You know, and we should avoid from teaching our children to satisfy them with snacks. It always scares me when I'm sitting somewhere and I watch a mother keep reaching in her bag, giving the baby candy, giving the baby snacks. You need to feed a child for 2 hours while you wait with them in the waiting room, or while you're sitting in a church service, while you work their little stomach to death for 2 hours. No one needs to eat 2 hours straight. And you're
right.
Teaching your child to soothe themselves with food, and then when they're 12 and they're overweight, or when they're 20 and they have diabetes, and you're wondering, well, where did that come from? You know, you've taught them to soothe themselves that way. They're going to continue to do that when they're 12. They're going to continue to soothe themselves like that when they're 40. Food going to make them feel better, and they're not going to even know why. And it's because somebody was slipping them, you know, chips in church. So you just put them some apple slices, if you just got to give them some carrot sticks and celery sticks. I bet you the baby will tell you, I don't need 2 hours of carrot sticks. You know, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. Don't nobody want to eat carrot sticks for 2 hours during a movie. But they'll eat popcorn, butter popcorn, nacho chips. That's what you need to start sneaking into the movies in your purse. It's some carrot sticks, some celery sticks. You know, that's what, sneak into the movies. Don't sneak into the movies the double-sized Snickers bar. And, then, you know, you're killing yourself. And I want to see us all live, and as it says in the good book, live life more abundantly. To give yourself a sugar rush, now I don't just drink this coffee with all this sugar, this tea, this Mountain Dew, just to get this Rip It, to give me an energy boost. But what is it doing to your body to get that quick boost? Is it worth all the cells that you're killing off in the meantime? Sister Neosh, is there any other good scrumptious dishes that you would like to share with us? Because the sister did ask for some other food choices. Anything else?
I have to think. I do have another cauliflower recipe, but I'll share that. It's like cauliflower breadsticks. They're like
mm.
bread, but I know, me and the cheese and cauliflower together.
Really?
I'll send you that one as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. And it's called cauliflower breadsticks?
They're cheesy breads, but they're made with cauliflower.
Cheesy bread.
But it's called,
made with cauliflower.
Like,
that sounds very interesting.
It is. And it actually tastes really good.
And that sounds like something that would be fun to make with some
children,
because to let them look at cauliflower and even let them taste a little bit, I'm thinking, now this don't sound like this is going to be fun. It would be fun to have them go ahead and eat it, go ahead and cook it, and then see if they like it and see the shock on their faces, because sometimes we just don't know that there's something else that we could like besides the things we're used to. Most people, if you think about it, you're not eating a great variety. You're eating the same few things over and over, and there could be other varieties of things that you could try. You really could. Go ahead.
I don't know if you talked about fruit and eating certain fruits. I mean, we sometimes people think that when they have to stay away from sugar and they have to stay away from all sugar, they think they can't eat fruit. But you can eat fruit. You just have to be mindful of which fruits you eat and how much fruit you eat.
That's right. There is a limit. Even with eating fruit, most diabetic index will tell you to limit it to a cup because, of course, fruit has sugar in it too, and you want to keep that glucose, fructose, all of those coses, keep them down. But one thing that someone brought to my attention in the past that I think would be great to incorporate into saying at this show, I think it would be helpful, is sometimes we don't realize how much sugar and carbs and calories we get out of the things we drink. Turn that juice around. You know, you say, oh, I'm just drinking a juice. I'm not drinking pop. Turn it around and read what's on the back of that juice. You know, look at the carbs in the juice. Look at the fat that's in the juice. Sometimes we don't realize even what we're drinking could be hurting us. We're really surprised to see that what we're drinking could be causing us a problem. Have you ever looked on the back of something you were drinking and got shot?
Yes. Especially when you drink the entire bottle and then you look and you see that it's 2.5 servings per bottle.
Right. And it's not even like you're drinking out the super gulp. It's like a regular size bottle and they're like, oh, you just got 4 servings. Like, how did in one bottle? Because and you taste it and you could tell, God, this is awfully syrupy. Yeah, it wasn't meant to be consumed like that.
The whole bottle.
I mean, and with chips, that's where it really, chips or snack things is where it really shocks me. You look on the back of a small little bag of Lay's, and it says 6 chips is a serving. Then it tells you, you know, 200 calories per serving, and that's not the bag. That's 6 chips or something. You know, this whatever you're eating right now, wherever you are, turn it around and look on the back and see what it says is an actual serving size. Then think how many do you eat. You know, how many do you drink? Sometimes in a bottle, sometimes the bottle is the serving size, but I've never seen a bag of snacks. Chips, the skinny popcorn that I see all the ladies with in their bags, the skinny pop is just the rage. But turn those things over and see what does it say is actually a serving size, and you'll be shocked sometimes at what you're eating as a serving. A serving is much smaller than what you want to consume. That's an excellent point that you made, Sister Miyoshi. Excellent point. Do we have any other callers in the queue, Sister Queen? Any hands raised?
No, ma'am, but you have a lot in the chat room.
Okay, you have any questions in the chat room?
Yes, ma'am. Very interesting issue going on here. Carlton, he says, you said last week that this caused erectile dysfunction. After taking insulin, does it reverse that dysfunction?
Wow. I want to say yes and no. If your body starts to deteriorate from the things that you do, some things will not get back to the full force. Like if you let your diabetes get so bad that you start to have that tingling in your feet and that tingling in your fingers, that diabetic neuropathy, you never really get that. Even if you get your diabetes under control, once you kill those nerve endings, they're dead. You know, there's not a lot of nerve regeneration like that. So that's why preventative care is the best care. So I will probably, and I'm not your doctor, you got to go see your doctor, especially if, you know, that means, like we talked about, those are extremities. You know, that organ, that's an extremity. That's not a core organ. It might seem like it to you, but it's not, as far as your body's concerned. It's trying to preserve those organs in your torso, in your core of your body, and your brain. It's not worrying about feet, fingers, toes, or sexual dysfunction. It's not a concern of your body when it's trying to preserve the most important part. So you may want to think of preventative measures. But of course, a lot of people don't realize that erectile dysfunction drugs were created accidentally. They weren't created intentionally. They were trying to create a cardiac medication and got something that ended up working for erectile dysfunction. So there are drugs for that too if you just want to get on one more medication. But as you continue to change your eating habits, because as you get those eating habits into order and you don't have a need for insulin, then your body may start to give you use of that blood flow, because it's more a blood flow issue with that condition that Brother is speaking of than a nerve-ending damage. Now, that's sensitivity and all of that. But as far as blood flow, as you get that blood sugar under control, the blood flow should increase. But he has to go and talk to his doctor because his issue may not be blood flow and nerve damage. It could be something else. So what's most important is if that's important to you, then you definitely need to take care of yourself, because, see, diabetes and heart disease are commonly end up linked together because of blood flow issues. And blood flow issues and cardiac issues lead to cardiac arterial disease. And as people with diabetes that's uncontrolled and have those other issues, your body is going to conserve its energy and send the blood to the necessary organs. And that organ is not a necessary organ for life. So if that's one of the concerns that's on Brother's mind, is if my diabetes get out of control, I'm not going to be able to do other things, then if that will inspire you to eat well and live well, then there you go. That's a good reason. If nothing else will inspire you to eat well and live well, then let that be your inspiration. But definitely, if you're having if anything in your life is not living your life to its fullest, if you see diminished capacity in any part of your body, you can't see like you used to, and it seemed like it happened immediately. It wasn't gradual that your arm was getting further out with the newspaper. You know, you wake up early in the morning and you can't see. If things are happening in unusual time frames, run to your doctor. Do not be, like I said at the beginning of this show, one of those people that say, I don't want to go to the doctor. He's going to give me bad news. No, the news exists. Not hearing it is what's going to kill you, not him saying it, because not hearing it gives you no opportunity to fix it and adjust. So if that's your concern, dear brother, or anyone else that's listening, dear sister, might be listening forward, dear brother, take the loved one, and if you love yourself enough, go to a doctor. Get all your blood work done. It could be something else. Like I said at the beginning of the show, they told my mother she was a diabetic. And for 2 years, she battled diabetes, and it made no sense because she didn't have any other mitigating or complementary issues to prove she's diabetic except this blood sugar analysis. Turns out she had pancreatic cancer. So while she's fighting diabetes for life, she didn't even have it. The irregular blood sugar is because of cancer. So don't presume, oh, I got diabetes and I'm having this issue. I'm having tingling in my legs. It might have nothing to do with your diabetes. You could have a circulatory issue, and you might need to see your cardiologist. A lot of tingling in the legs is cardiology. It's not diabetes. So I would say please, please go see your doctor or take your loved one to see a doctor. What else you got, Sister Queen?
Okay. Y'all ready to ride with me?
Oh, Lord.
Okay.
Let me get my safety belt on. Sister Mia, I'm just going to say that you'll never know what the queen goes
to. No, we're going to help Annette with her brother. She says, my brother thinks he has diabetes because he is hungry all the time. He is not overweight, but he is often tired. Also, he is thirsty all the time. And my sister-in-law says he's in and out of the restroom throughout the night.
do they have a home evaluation test he can take that will encourage him to go to the doctor, because as of now he refuses?
Oh, well, yes, absolutely. The best home test is fasting blood sugar test. And, you know, not eating from midnight the night before, get up in the morning by 8 o'clock in the morning, not eating all night, and do a finger stick. And you can buy those finger stick monitors at any drugstore. I mean, that's one way to do it. But the best way to do it, I'm so sorry, is to go to your doctor. Now, you can find some of these free health clinics in almost any, there's, I mean, I don't even know how rural you could get to not be able to find one, because they have the little trucks that have come out to even rural areas, and you all meet at the farmer's market and you get your health, because they pay for this. This is something that the government is even willing to pay for. So if you want to start a 501, you know, you want to go out and get a nonprofit business, it's a great one to go get, is a little health, you know, health van that does these little small health tests. So go to a health fair. If you want to go somewhere anonymous, go to the, we call it Hermit Keeper here, but go to the Department of Health. You go there, and they'll do these things, and they'll do them anonymously. So some people are concerned. If I go to my doctor and it's going to hit my insurance, it can mess me up with my job, you know, like pilots and diabetes. There's certain jobs that it's almost a no-no. They won't let you do it if you're diabetic, because they're concerned that if your sugar gets out of control, that something can happen to you. Now, I have heard of this excessive eating or excessive hunger. You know, Brother Rudolph also touched on that last week as a sign of diabetes. It could be, and it could be some other stuff too. It could just be overactive appetite. It could just be that hungry. But the getting up in the middle of the night, having to go to the bathroom, definitely is a sign of diabetes, but it's also a sign of prostate issues. You know, there's so many other mitigating factors, and working in healthcare, the exciting thing about working in healthcare is it's like being Sherlock Holmes. Just because somebody present with one thing, that doesn't mean that that's the problem. Like I said again with my mother, presented like a diabetic, sugar's out of whack, going to the bathroom, eating a lot. She was eating and losing weight. They thought she was diabetic, eating, losing weight, high appetite, going to the bathroom. Urine has a different color and a different smell. They were wrong. Yes, she had decreased insulin production, just like a diabetic. Yes, her sugar was out of weight, just like a diabetic, because cancer was eating her pancreas, and that threw off her insulin. So no matter how good or bad your symptoms might look, and you get to Googling them, it'll scare you to death. You're like, oh, my God, I'm dying. Google any two conditions, and somebody going to tell you that's going to kill you. But you have to go to your doctor, because it could be one other piece of the puzzle that you're blowing off. Always check your urine every day. Every time you go to the bathroom, look at your urine. It should not be so yellow. It shouldn't be canary yellow. It shouldn't be dark burnt yellow. It should be slightly pale yellow, like a beautiful dress for Easter Sunday. Just pale, pale, pale yellow. If your urine is pungent, you need to see a doctor. You definitely might need some water. But I would say go see a doctor. Every little thing, you know, the fact that you're waking up in the middle of the night, could be that your prostate is closing, because you said it was a man. Doesn't necessarily mean it's diabetes, but you have to tell this person how much you love them. You have to stage an intervention, a healthcare intervention. We love you so much. We want you to go to the doctor, and we want you to be here. And you being afraid to go to a doctor or not concerned enough to go to a doctor could cause us to lose you, and we're not willing to lose you. So all the people who love this person need to come together and get him to go to see a doctor, because I can say yes on the one hand, but on the other hand, it could be something totally different, like it was with my mother. Okay, Queen, anything else you got?
Can I add something?
Yes, go right ahead, sister.
Two of the other things that she said was that he's not overweight and that he also has excessive thirst, which excessive thirst is also a sign of diabetes, but you don't have to be overweight to be diabetic.
Nope.
That's the other thing.
That's true. What's her name? Halle Berry. There's a lot of work with diabetes, and clearly she's not overweight, and there are different types of diabetes, diabetes 1 and diabetes 2. And no, you do not have to be overweight. It's really about the insulin. But if you are overweight, losing weight will help lower your risk and can get you completely off medication if you are diabetic. So I wish I could say, this and this, 100%. No, can't say it because it could still be another factor that I don't know. But make sure every day you look at your urine and your bowel movements. It's important to look and see what's coming out of you. It's very important. You can't flush the toilet so fast that you don't know. And if your doctor asks you what is the color or the smell of your urine, you don't know because you're burning two incense, spraying, and flushing the toilet so fast, you don't know the smell of your own release. You do need to know that. It's very important for your good health. All right, Sister Queen, what else you got?
Okay, we have we have a question from Carmen. Carmen say, do the Muslims believe pork causes diabetes, and is that the reason why they don't eat it?
Ooh. No. Go to the next one.
That's the last one for right now. But you have,
praise be to
you
the
got, you got one on the phone. You got one on the phone. I have to decipher through some of these questions
the
chat room. And I'm going to open up the line for Brother William F. Muhammad, who has raised his hand even though he's been here all night. Assalamu alaikum, Brother William.
Well, alaikum salam. How is everyone?
Fine, praise be to
Allah.
Well,
sir.
I just have to giggle a little bit. That was so direct answer that Sister Lachelle had for that question. But you know, that is true. No, we don't eat hog because number one, it's bad for you. Number two, Allah prohibits in every major monotheistical religion, and plus it's just nasty, you know. So I had to laugh. Thank you all so much for having me today.
I ain't even want to.
I
turned off
bad.
Into the pork conversation, but we might have to do a show where we do give some energy to that. But since that's not today's show, that's quick and dirty. The quick answer was no. But we can, you know, definitely give some time to pork another time, but not today. I'm glad that you're on with us, brother, because I know that because this is a disaster preparedness show primarily, but because Brother Rudolph and myself are health professionals, we will choose from time to time to discuss something that's important that's going on with health. And he and I both had family members very close to us unexpectedly for them find out they were diabetics in very dramatic ways. So it was just popping up all over as diabetes tends to. So he wanted to do the part one, and he chose to do the part two. But now that we have you on, I want to make sure that I invite anyone in the audience with a disaster preparedness question that does not relate to diabetes. You can definitely call in or raise your hand or go into the chat room and post your question. And if anyone has any diabetes questions, that part, that's not gone. You know, you can still continue to ask for the next hour. But since we have an expert with us, I don't want to waste any time with talking with our dear brother about disaster preparedness. So I know we talked about not being able to store your insulin last week in a disaster. You know, insulin has to be refrigerated. So it is, you know, problematic for a diabetic to be able to get to their insulin during disaster flush, you can't get to the pharmacy. Since we're talking about health, I'm going to stay in that vein. What other health conditions would be difficult, in your opinion, to manage during a disaster? Or how do you, you know, what advice do you give to people who have medical conditions and take medication if a disaster strikes?
Well, that's really a good question. I mean, there is a plethora of things that can affect a person during a disaster, not just injuries, but illnesses as well. Cancer, people who have cancers, or people who have high blood pressure, people who have heart conditions, all of these things are going to come into play in a very negative way when there is a disaster. One thing that we do have access to is something that's called NOAA, N-O-A-A. And if you have a weather radio, which you can get at Walmart, you can get it at Walgreens, they don't even cost $20. a lot of times you can, you're not necessarily predicting, but it will give you a little bit of time before a natural disaster will strike. Floods don't happen in 15 minutes. They happen in an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, sometimes a couple of days. Snowstorms, it may be telling you, hey, it's going to snow on Wednesday. All the weather models are saying it's going to snow on Wednesday. So you may want to go out Saturday the week before and say, hey, I may need to stock up on my medication. I'm not a big proponent of saving medication and keeping it in there and rationing it out before these type of things, but you definitely want to put some things in process for you. Speak to your healthcare provider, speak to your physician, speak to your nurse practitioner or whoever it is that you deal with, maybe even your pharmacist, to see if you can come up with a plan to have these things stored and prepared for yourself.
And I agree with you. You do have to be careful with stockpiling medication. Excellent point. I'm glad that you mentioned that for whoever's listening today, because somebody needed to hear that. I'm going to go on in. I'm going to save 2 pills out of every bottle and put them up. No.
Right.
Brother Rudolph does suggest getting that 90-day supply, but you got to take that 90 days. You have to use that. And as you
right.
get the next one, then you put it in. First in, first out. You know, this is not like
right.
First out, you know, last out, last in. No, as soon as
right.
you get the next supply, you got to use that, because
absolutely.
This medication has a shelf life, and it won't be,
right.
it'll be like you took Tic Tacs. The pills will do you no good. You
absolutely.
Know what I mean? I got these for 3 years. I got these from my dead granny. I put them up. No, it will do you no good, and don't be taking other people's medication. You
yeah,
need
absolutely
to stop that.
Not. Absolutely not. You know, that's something that could absolutely kill you. You know, you don't know what the doctor has prescribed for them. It's based on age, weight, height. There's a lot of different things that go into prescribing medication, and it's not just because your knee is hurting or you might need a little bit of Tussin. You know, we have to be very realistic and not be as spooky as we may have been in the past. But when you stockpile medications, it opens you up for possible home invasions, because there's other people that may know that you're stockpiling these type of things and run in your house, and now you have a whole other thing to deal with, not just you your sugar being up, as we say in our hood. So let's take that into consideration.
Now, you were
question.
Talking about this flood thing. You say you can know about a flood days in advance on this NOAA system?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
I've never heard of that.
Absolutely. NOAA system, if you go to Walmart or go to Walgreens, or you can contact us, the Disaster Preparedness Task Force, it may not be a week, it may not be months, it may not be, but it may be a day and a half. If you know that you live in an area where there's a lot of snow, and, you know, in the East Coast, there's been tons of snow just dropped on the East Coast. Well, eventually that snow has to do something called melt, and that water has got to go somewhere. So if you know that these things are going to be happening, you know, some things are common sense. Every single year, there are billions of dollars that are spent in the United States of America just on flood damage. In New York, Pennsylvania, Connecticut, they are some of the highest. They spend anywhere between $197 million to $682 million just on flood damage.
Wow.
The next closest is Illinois, Missouri, and Iowa. They spend about the same amount. And then you have Texas and Louisiana. More so the northern parts of Texas and the northern parts of Louisiana, they're spending anywhere between $85 million and $156 million. But the highest rate of flooding is in the middle of the country, in the middle of the West. Guess where it is?
Detroit. I don't know.
No, it's actually Colorado.
Really?
Because
it's still snowing here. That's why I said Detroit. We got snow today, so that's why I thought maybe us.
No, but Colorado, you know, it is completely landlocked. And that place, I mean, because of the snow, there's a lot of ski resorts and things like that in Colorado. The higher you go up, the higher the elevation, the colder the area. So when that water melts, when that snow melts, it causes certain things. So we have to ask ourselves, number one, are you at risk for flooding, and is there more of that risk to people who live elsewhere, you know, in relationship to where you live? I live on the east side of Detroit. Does it flood a little bit more on the east side or on the west side or on the north side? You know, I live in Louisville, Kentucky. Does it flood more in Valley Station, or does it flood more in the west end of Louisville? So these are some things that you need to start familiarizing yourself. You know, tune into a NOAA weather radio, a commercial radio, or some type of television for information. Don't just say, oh, there's some flash flooding around and think that doesn't pertain to you. So you want to start putting some things in order right now.
Can I ask you a question?
Go ahead.
With regard to flooding, how can that adversely affect the water supply? I think I heard a news report here not long ago that talked about the increased amount of snow and once it started to melt, how certain things were falling into the water supply as a result of the melting snow.
Absolutely. It could absolutely affect your water supply quite drastically. Just in West Virginia, just last month and the month before, there was some type of spillage from a coal plant. But the coal plant was affected by the adverse weather. There was a lot of ice and there was a lot of snow, and it caused some damage to that coal mine and the production of that coal. So all of the water in that area had a horrible licorice smell. You couldn't drink it. You couldn't bathe in it. You couldn't cook with it. You couldn't make any red Kool-Aid with it. You couldn't do anything with it. So as snow melts, water is always going to seek its lowest resting place. If you have a drop of water at the top of your windshield, by the time you move out of your driveway, that water drop would have traveled all the way down. And so it does with snow or ice or any other type of liquid. So as it's moving along, it is a very powerful force. That water is collecting everything that's in its path. All of those microorganisms that are coming into, and don't think just because you put a little bleach on it that it's going to fix that. Not the way that the water purification systems in most of these cities are able to purify or cleanse water. I grew up in New York City. In New York City, you can't just turn on the water tap and expect to get clear water. It's going to be brown. You got to let it settle a little bit. And then maybe you could drink it. You know, I wouldn't drink it now, you know, knowing what I know. But, you know, that's why a bottle of water is so important, and storing water, not just for drinking, not just for cooking, but for bathing and washing your clothes. Does that answer your question some?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Great question.
When you made the comment about east side of Detroit or west side of Detroit, I almost had to laugh because it really is in Detroit. It's the northwest side of Detroit floods heavier than anywhere else in Detroit. And it was amazing that you would say that.
Wow. I had no clue. I had no clue.
So even when you don't know you're right. That's the God right there. Praise be to the Lord.
God works in a mysterious way.
But definite one.
Absolutely. You know, I was reading something in the Bible, and, you know, Sister Lachelle, I've known you for years, and Brother Rudolph and I have been very dear friends and very close for 20 years. And I'm not a huge Bible person. I knew somebody was sneaking on here.
Finish. How's the family?
Oh man, all praise to Allah. How are you doing today?
Oh, I'm alive, and I thank Allah much for that.
Yes, sir.
Don't let me interrupt. Keep it going.
All right. Well, since you gave me the green light, I'm gonna run my mouth. That's all right with you. No, I'm just joking.
No, as I was driving to work today, looking at all this snow, thinking I've clearly had enough of this. Will it be snowing for Easter, Jesus? I mean, it's just so, it was a, literally a whiteout this morning. I was driving to work, and I couldn't see more than four cars in front of me. But as I passed this huge snow mound, I thought, what are they going to do when that sucker melts? Because in my neighborhood, that's when the problem would come, when you were, which was exactly what you said, Brother William. When it would start to melt, the neighbors would have to go out and take turns sweeping off the drains, because if they didn't, all of the houses would flood.
Just think about this. 6 inches of water, just 6 inches, half of a ruler, will reach the bottom of most passenger cars and can cause some studding and cause loss of control. A foot of water will float most vehicles, including SUVs. 2 feet of rushing water will carry away most vehicles, or carry it away, not just float it, but physically move that vehicle, including SUVs and pickups. It doesn't take much. Water is an extremely, extremely powerful and dangerous thing. And we got to prepare for these type of things. Sometimes you're not going to be able to use your vehicle. Sometimes you're going to have to use the vehicle that God gave you, which is those two legs. So it's important that, you know, like Sister Miyoshi was speaking a little bit earlier, and you as well, about exercising, being in some kind of shape. You know, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, in this wonderful book that's called The Fall of America, he says in this book, if you don't mind, I'd like to read a little bit. Is that okay? It talks about these four judgments. And what are those four judgments? Does anybody know what the four judgments is?
Well, earthquakes.
What's the first thing he said? Rain.
Rain.
Rain, absolutely. So we're moving into the spring season, and in the spring season, that's usually when we see an influx of thunderstorms, rainstorms, heavy torrential rains. We see a lot of the snow, or the winter storms melting down off of higher elevated places. We also see an influx of tornadoes, because you have forces of winds of different temperature, or different types and temperatures of wind pushing against each other. I know in Kentucky, it didn't just snow in Detroit, it snowed in Kentucky. But 2 days ago, it was 70 degrees. These are things Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us in this book, The Fall of America, that he would cause your pores to open up, allow that sickness to get into your pores, and then make it so cold that those pores would close up and get tight with that sickness inside of you, and people would die off that way. So it's important not just to, you know, it's a little bit warm outside, and now people wearing the short pants and they're wearing the T-shirts thinking that it's all done. And it's not, you know, so.
You know, on that note, Brother William, that you're talking about, talking about the rain in general, now, you know, people have to be on the lookout for flash floods.
Absolutely.
Flash floods, mudslides.
Absolutely.
With the melting snow, it's going to cause the riverbeds to increase, the local bodies of water are going to increase, and if there's no drainage for this water to go, so that water finds its own, seeks its own level.
Right.
So if there's nowhere made for the water to go, it's going to find somewhere to go.
Absolutely.
And
Absolutely.
That generally will be in your house.
That's why we were mopping out the basement.
Yeah.
The water was taking its own level. Could you define flash flood? I heard you use that term. And for the novice, could you define what makes it a flash flood?
A flash flood is a flood that happens just like that. Snap your finger and you look up and there's a wall of water coming at you. And it's coming at such a speed you're not going to outrun it. You can't swim in it, because you don't know what's in it. It's bringing everything with it. Trees, cars, boats, dead animals, rocks, trucks, barns, anything that wasn't nailed down is coming in that water. And then the disease that's in that water from the dead animals, the sewage, and everything else, so you can't drink it either.
Right. And then on the news, you know, or listening out, Brother Rudolph, I was talking about NOAA radio, weather radio, to start listening to those things when you know that it's raining, because that rain can bring about some things. If you know that if NOAA is saying, hey, there may be 2 to 4 inches, don't go and think about it's going to be 2 inches of rain. Imagine it's going to be 6 inches of rain and start moving out on that. We have to know the difference between what a flash flood watch is and what a flash flood warning is. Flash flood watches just mean, hey, this is possible. Be prepared to move to higher ground, listen to the radio, some type of television for some kind of information. But a warning means that this is happening right now. You need to seek higher ground, and usually it's best to seek that higher ground on foot, not using a vehicle. We just discussed 6 inches of water can stall out the vehicle.
Yes.
We just discussed that two feet of rushing water is going to carry away your vehicle. Now you're trying to move around.
I always think about people that drive, and you drive your car and you drive through puddles of water, not knowing how deep the puddle is, what's in that puddle of water, or anything. You know,
right.
And that's a very dangerous habit that people have. Just go driving through puddles of water.
Right, and not really even taking it into consideration that water and asphalt don't mix.
Right.
It will cause roads to buckle.
We've had this hellacious winter where the ground has been frozen for almost 6 months. Now it's going to warm up to the point where the ice is going to melt. Okay, well, if the ice melts and the ice was sitting on top of this asphalt, some of it had to seep into the asphalt. That's going to melt. So as that melts, it changes the consistency and the structure of the asphalt. It causes cracks in the asphalt, potholes in some places. And now what happens is as it warms up and the molecular structure of that water changes from an ice molecule to a water molecule, now what it does is it affects the strength of that asphalt, and at any given time, that asphalt can just give way. And so now the question is, what's holding that asphalt up? Was it just filled in a couple of months before the winter, or is it solid ground up once again? When the sinkhole comes, is it a sinkhole because there's no ground up under it, and now you end up with a 20-foot hole rather than just a little pothole? These are the things that we are getting ready in all states. We're getting ready to witness.
Absolutely. Another thing, Brother Rudolph, that we have to think about, too, is that that water might be electrically charged from an underground or some type of power line. So that's absolutely some things that we need to be watchful for. You know, these are some things that could really cause some serious things. And thinking about going into a building that's been affected by flood, you don't know if that foundation has been shaken.
Right.
You know, you don't know where the hidden damage is, especially in that foundation, because foundations normally are underground and they poke up from to above the ground. You know,
Brother William, you're right. And
the
Honorable Elijah Muhammad, in the Fall of America, he talks about the foundations of buildings and the foundations of the roads being eroded by water. Not only does it do that, that water then seeps into the burrows of animals that live underground, and it brings them out. And they're angry because their homes were disturbed, so now they're on the warpath, and their vengeance is turned on us.
Right. And then we have disease, rabies, you have lice, you have all of these things that will be affected. And think about people who have septic tanks. Everybody doesn't have the type of waste disposal.
Right.
You know, they don't have sewer in certain places. A lot of people live in areas where there are septic tanks or cesspools and pits or leaching systems. You know, these things are going to cause some serious health hazards. These animals are already underground. These things are leaking in. There was a big boom, Brother Rudolph, behind my house. And you've been to my home. You know, I live, but the back of my house is basically a mountain.
Mountain.
Not quite a
yes,
mountain,
sir.
But it's quite high, right? But we heard
yes,
this
sir.
Big boom. I said, oh, my goodness, it's probably a transformer. So I go outside, and I'm looking around. I have my flashlight. I'm prepared, okay, if something is going to jump out at me, I'm going to be able to deal with these things. But then I couldn't find one thing. I couldn't find a limb. I couldn't find a tree down. I couldn't find anything that would cause my house to shake. But that frozen, that ice that was seeped down into the ground around my home started to compact, and that compaction made it caused a big boom, and it caused my whole house to shake. Now, my house is 4,000 square feet, and it sounded like a transformer bursting, exploding. So just think of all of those animals. All
and
of
you
got to
remember.
Water.
Yes, sir. And you got to remember, what about all of the underground pockets of natural gas?
Right.
That will now be affected by the ice or the ice melting. And the changing again of the molecular structure from the ice to water, and changing in the space that's down there. It's just so many different scenarios that we could come up with that could change the dynamics of this conversation.
Absolutely.
But it all has to do with disaster preparedness.
Absolutely. So we know that we have to do some things. Before floods, you got to avoid, number one, purchasing or building a home or living in an area that's in a floodplain unless you elevate or you reinforce that home. You'll need to get with a contractor, and you'll need to get with certain city officials to make sure that that's not where you live. But number two, elevate your furnace, your water heater, electric panel, if it's acceptable to flooding. So if your hot water heater, which may be powered by gas and electricity, if it's sitting on the floor, you may want to lift it up and put something up underneath there so that you can at least have something, some way to protect
you. Some kind of clearance, sir. Yes,
some
sir.
Kind of
clearance.
Yep. You know, don't just
how
try to
do
it
that?
On your own. Don't always try to do that, but on your own, sometimes you're going to need to get a professional in.
Okay.
You know, sometimes you are, but if you happen to have a husband or one of the brothers is very handy and they know what they're doing and they can do things up to code, not just somebody who say they know, but somebody that you know and knows how to move pipe, use that person. Not just Ray Ray, because he'd do it for $5. You want to make
right.
sure that it's done correctly. Okay. Now, you also.
Well, anytime you're talking about dealing with your hot water heater or your furnace or something like that, you better be getting a professional because
absolutely.
Your family's life is at stake.
Absolutely.
So you got to put that disclaimer out
on,
there because you'll have somebody like me running to the basement.
Right. You know, install some check valves in your sewer traps. You know, you can go to a Home Depot, go to Lowe's. They can actually show you. There's a class that they have in
right.
my region
yeah.
that can show you how to install those check valves to prevent flood water from backing up into the drains of the home. You
right.
know, a sub pump. You know, those are things that you're going to need to make sure that you have. You know, so at least these things aren't backing up into the piping, you know, into your house. Construct some type of barrier. You know, learn how to build a small levee, some type of flood wall to stop flooding some flood water, you know, from entering in your house. Learn how to seal off your house using maybe some sandbags. If you can't, you know, go out and afford it, well, I'm going to go buy this. Man, get you some. Go to Home Depot or Lowe's or Walmart, get you some sand and some plastic bags and line that bad boy up. There's a lot of things that you can use. But trying to stick some paper towels up underneath your door. I want to help. Blowing at it, trying to push it back with the wind is not going to help. So,
your Eureka vacuum cleaner in your house is not going to help.
You know, for those of us who have a Kirby, that is not going to help you.
No, but the Kirby dealer told me I could use it for that.
I'm sure he did.
He said it could pick up some water off the kitchen floor. He didn't say it could pick up the Mississippi River.
So,
no, but that's very true, Brother William. You're 100% right. You're giving some very good information to the listeners about the season that we're moving into now. Everybody, and again, everybody's complaining. Oh, I can't wait till the snow is over. Hurry up with the spring. Let it get warm. Okay. Be careful what you ask for. See, and as you were speaking before about the sickness that goes along with the changing of the thing, think about how many people are sick right now just because we had a two-day spurt of
warm
elevated temperatures, and then it went right back to being cold, and people are sick right now.
Absolutely.
Warm weather, I always tell people, you don't get sick when it's cold. You may have been sick already when it turned cold, and so now you're manifesting it. But when it's really cold, you don't really get sick, because if it's that cold, the germs and the pathogens that cause the diseases, they're either in a sporous state because it's so cold, or they're dead because it's so cold.
Right.
It's not until things warm up that you start to get sick.
Now, hey, Brother Rudolph, I deal with a lot of the business aspects of disaster preparedness. And I was talking about some numbers earlier about how much states pay every year for flood damage. And we talked about New York and Pennsylvania upwards of $680 million a year. But I wanted to also talk about a few other things. Flood losses are not covered under homeowners insurance policy.
I was just getting ready to say that. Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Not covered at all under any circumstance, no matter what you think. 100% of the time, this is accurate truth. Flood losses are not covered under homeowners insurance policy. You have to have a separate flood insurance policy. If you live in a floodplain, you must have flood insurance. Whether you're in an apartment or a home or a homeowner, you really need to have some type of flood insurance. If hopefully we can afford it, you know, because flood insurance is very expensive. Now, FEMA manages the National Flood Insurance Program, which makes federally backed flood insurance available in communities that agree to adopt and enforce floodplain management ordinances, and that will help to reduce future flood damage. But that's not always the case where you live. More often than not, you know, Brother Rudolph and I, we always have a laugh. I have a boat in my truck. In
yes,
the back seat
sir.
Of my truck. And he says, you know, he's laughing and because I had to use that boat one day.
Yes,
a lot
sir.
Of believers
right.
in my city, Louisville, is very susceptible to natural disasters. We sit in the middle of the New Madrid fault line, which is the strongest active fault line in America. It stretches from one part of the country all the way out to California. We sit in the Ohio Valley, which is, once weather is here, it's going to be here for quite a while. We're prone to flooding. We're prone to wind storms. We're prone to ice storms. That's what happens here. And there was an elderly believer. They laughed 3 weeks before, man, you got a boat in your car, man. All you got a boat in your car, brother. You disaster for real, ain't you? Until it stopped. And he couldn't get out of the house to get his medication.
Crazy.
We got a lot of background noises. So, like I
just
said,
like Noah, everybody
like
laughed.
Everybody laughed. And it's mighty funny that we're talking about Noah right now, you know, with that movie coming out, Noah. You know, they said it won't be water but fire next time.
That's right.
Water is very real. The Honorable Louis Farrakhan has been teaching us for a very, very, very long time, and even longer than that, we have heard from the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad in the fall of America on the time and what must be done. And like I was saying before, Brother Rudolph and Sister Lachelle, I was reading in the Bible, and Rudy, you know, Brother Rudolph, you know I'm not a big Bible guy, but I happened to come across this. I'm more of a Quran guy. It's my thing, okay? But I did come across this. It's in the New Testament in James chapter 1, verse 22-25. Can I read that?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
It says, "Do not deceive yourselves by just listening to his word. Instead, put it into practice. If you listen to the word but do not put it into practice, you are like a people who look in a mirror and see themselves as they are. They take a good look at themselves and then go away and at once forget what they look like. But if you look closely into the perfect law that sets people free and keep on paying attention to it and do not simply listen and then forget it, but put it into practice, you will be blessed by God in what you do."
Wow.
Now, I thought that was quite profound.
I agree. Give the covers again. That was James what? Give it again for
James
anybody who didn't know it was going to be that heavy.
Right.
James 1, 21-25.
Absolutely.
Beautiful.
Now, Sister Miyoshi sent me a text talking about Revelations last week, James this week. You know, what am I on something here? You know, the Bible is a book of prophecy. And right now we're in what that prophecy is talking about. All of those people who came before us, the Moses, peace be upon them, the Aarons, the Abrahams, peace be upon them, the Lots, peace be upon them, you know, Jesus, all, even Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon them, all these worthy servants of God, they all talked about this particular day in which we are living. We're seeing disasters left and right. We're seeing wars and rumors of wars. All of these things are coming at full speed now. So now it's not just about thinking about getting a survival kit together. You should have already had it together. If you don't have it together now, tomorrow morning, as soon as you get up, you know, because these things are happening. I can't save you if you haven't done anything for yourself. I'm Elijah Muhammad. What's my favorite, my favorite quote, Brother Rudolph?
Do for self or suffer the consequences.
That's what it said. Chapter 34, the judgment of America. You know, everybody knows we're on our way to purchasing a tremendous amount of farmland to build industry. And Honorable Elijah Muhammad says on page 147, he said, "Look at the wicked devils in Alabama. They are against us while we are trying to be at peace with them, but there is no peace in them. We have done nothing to them. They are against us just because of the idea that we are Muslim and black people." And then it says that he has made them blind on purpose. The judgment of America, judgment has come to you, America. Woe to you who seek to fight against Allah and his aim and purpose. Woe to you, America. Allah God has made you blind to his judgment, and therefore you are committing suicide. He has made you blind on purpose to give you the full dose of his wrath. For when a man does not know the danger of fire, then he can fall headlong into it. Now, that's
praise
not from
you to Allah.
That is from the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And
that's
I make no mistake. I don't recognize no teacher other than the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the Most Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. That's it. Everything that they have said, Brother Rudolph, and you can bear witness, Sister Lachelle can bear witness, Sister Aziza, everyone on this phone can bear witness that every single word that the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad has given to us has come true.
That's right.
He said it's
places
that's
going, right.
You know, there's four judgments. There's four judgments that Allah is going to promise America are now coming up on her. Hail, snow, drought, earthquake. Think about the fires in the West Coast, pushing stars and entertainers out of their homes, multi-million dollar homes going up in flames, and there's nothing they can do. And the flames is not moving so fast like it's going to consume your house in 5 seconds. It
right.
moves it, very slowly, like a very old, elderly person chewing their tapioca very slowly. That's funny. I'm kidding. So,
yes, sir. Oh, man. Let me ask this question. First of all, are there any callers on the line at this point? No? Okay.
Yes, sir. Area code 678, I believe that's Georgia. Your mic is now live. Area code 678, your mic is now live. Okay, last four numbers, 7267. Your mic is live. All right, going once, going twice. Okay. And we have some questions out of the chat room if you're ready.
Okay.
Fill out.
Yeah.
Okay. Lisa says, does high cholesterol contribute to diabetes?
Does high cholesterol contribute to diabetes?
I know it contributes to heart disease.
Okay, all right. Since let me research that, and I will get back to you on that, because I don't want to, in haste, just give you an answer just for the sake of answering you and not be 100% correct in what I'm saying to you. So let me research that one, and we will, as a matter of fact, whoever sent that question in, email us at careunitdetroit911@ribs.com. Email us at careunitdetroit911@ribs.com, and we will email you back your answer.
Yes, sir. Okay, and we have another question from Alia, and I pray I'm pronouncing your name correctly. She wants to know, how does diabetes shut down circulation and cause amputation? I don't understand. My father had a sore on his toe, and they cut off his leg at the knee. A year later, followed by the other leg. How can diabetics save their limbs?
Okay. All right. Let me just very quickly just run her through the pathology of how this works. When a person is a diabetic, what happens is at the very ends of their circulatory system, they lose the sense of feeling. They lose sensory. It's called peripheral neuropathy. Peripheral neuropathy. At the very ends, fingers and toes, because the sugar level stays so high, it affects their ability to feel things. And it kills the nerve endings at the ends of the circulatory strands, meaning the very ends of the arteries, very ends of the veins, the capillaries begin to die. And when they die, there's no oxygen coming to that area, so everything in that area then dies. That's why they always say if you're a diabetic, you need to get your feet checked by a podiatrist regularly because they may injure themselves to their toes or their feet and not realize it because they can't feel anything. And once that area dies and it's not treated, gangrene sets in, which is infection. And if it's caught early enough, they can isolate it. But if it's not caught early enough, they have to amputate in order to save the entire body, because gangrene can cause a systemic infection or sepsis that can kill a person. But generally, when they start chopping, it doesn't stop. So the idea is to stop it before the chopping starts, which means to get the diabetes under control now. How do you do that? How to Eat to Live, Book 1 and Book 2. Those are the most masterful architectural guidelines that I can think of for a person to live a diabetic-free life. It's to know what to eat, when to eat it, how to prepare it, and stick to that. See, there are a lot of different foods on the market and out here. We don't need to be trying to sample every type of food that's out here. Everything that's out here to be eaten is not good for us to eat. The God gave us the diet that is good for us to help sustain, maintain, and protect our life. And we just have to decide that that's what we want to do, and if so, follow that guide. If not, then we go ahead into our grains. I'm done.
Yes, sir.
Teacher.
Okay. All right, and we have a question from Will. And he says, so if you can't move in flash flood and your house is flooding, what do you do?
What, he said if you can't move, I don't know what that means.
What do you mean?
Anything.
Are you paralyzed?
Okay, he says no. When you said the flash, he said it's not good to get in flash flood water. So what do you do? So I'm just taking it that he's saying that if it's not safe to emerge in flash flood waters, you know, like when you're driving or when you're walking or whatever. You're in the house, and the house begins to flood, and you can't go outside because the water is dangerous. What do you do?
Okay. Let me answer that backwards for to the front, like a Quentin Tarantino movie. Get to the highest part of your house and pray that the water stops rising before it gets to you. Going forward on that, this is where Brother Williams spoke of it earlier. You have a watch and a warning. A watch means just that they are looking at a weather pattern that may affect you. A warning is telling you there is a definite weather pattern that will definitely affect you and you need to get out now. When there is a weather warning in your area, you need to pay close attention to what they are telling you to do, and you need to make your decision quickly as to what you're going to do. Now, in hindsight of that, this is why we always teach and tell everyone you should already have a plan and you should be practicing your plan on a regular basis. If you don't know the area that you live in, find out about it. And it's easy to do in this age of information. You can go on the World Wide Web and find out if your area is flood prone, if it's hurricane prone, tornado prone, if you're prone to electrocution in that area. Whatever the vulnerabilities or hazards in that geographical area that you live in, you can find out, and that's what you need to start devising your escape or evacuation plan around. Brother William also said get a NOAA, N-O-A-A, a NOAA radio, or a radio that has a NOAA channel designated to it where 24/7 all they talk about is weather alerts, and you need to listen to it to know what's going on in your area. That's it. Brother Wayne, Sister Lachelle?
I think you pretty much said it all.
Okay, well, we have another question from Lady 93, and then we have one more question after that.
Okay.
What do you do to prevent mosquitoes in standing, what do you do to prevent getting bit by mosquitoes in standing water?
Get out of the standing water. standing water is a breeding. I didn't mean it like that. Forgive me, sis, that answered the question. I didn't mean it to be comical like that. I was just answering succinctly, like you said. Standing water is a breeding ground for mosquitoes. So whenever possible, you should try to eliminate the standing water around your home. Anywhere that water could collect and pool will bring those pesky mosquitoes. So you need to make sure as you do a check of your house that areas that they collect water, you are eliminating those areas.
Now,
and then, go ahead, brother.
Now, another thing that you can do, in your survival kit, you should have some kind of repellent. Now, is it the safest thing for you to spray onto your body? Not necessarily, but I would much rather deal with some skin so soft from Avon that has some off in it than I would contracting malaria. So,
or the West Nile virus,
any other kind of disease that mosquitoes carry that you're 9 times out of 10 you're not going to survive. Spray yourself down with deep. Make sure not necessarily deep, but with off. That's a really good brand. I like to use it. I have it myself. But you also want to make sure that you have on long clothing, long sleeve shirts. Have on a hat. Make sure you have something around your neck. And you know, for the men, don't go into that area with your short pants on, thinking you're going to swim through and make it on through. You know, put on some long pants. You know, even tie them up at the bottom to keep those things from flying up underneath your pants leg or your sleeve on your arm.
That's correct. Cover as much of your body, your skin, as possible. Wear light-colored clothing so you can see if something attaches itself to you, aside from the mosquitoes, like ticks or anything
leeches.
Of that nature.
Leeches.
Right.
Okay, and we have a question from Sister Pamela, and she wants to know, what are the most important things that you should have in your survival kit?
Everything. The most important thing that you need in your survival kit is the ability to think. You have to be able to remain calm in the middle of everything that's going on so that you can make rational decisions about what you need to do. Now, when it comes to the tools in your survival kit, well, that depends. What's most important depends on who you are, because what's important to me may not be important to you. I would say that, you know, having something to occupy your mind, is important so that you don't get overly stressed out and anxiety doesn't take you over and cause you to make irrational decisions. Of course, there is no substitute for a good first aid kit, for some handy tools, for something to nourish yourself, for some clean water to hydrate yourself, for the medication that you need if you have medical conditions. You see how this just goes on and on and on, because, again, what's important to me may not be the important thing to you. So it's where your head is and what's on your heart, and disaster kits are personal based on what the issue facing the individual. Sister Lachelle?
Thank you, Brother Rudolph. I would definitely say I agree with Brother Rudolph 100%, because he may design a kit for a single person, but if that same person has a child, I would add extra things to that kit, you know, for the child. You know, you're thinking, oh, it's a disaster. All you need is the essentials. Well, what are the essentials, though? I mean, if you need to bunker down somewhere and be quiet, the last thing you need is a whining three-year-old. When you had just threw three crayons and the coloring book that you got off the table in Denny's, like, I'm not saying you have to go out and buy a new coloring book. Take the coloring book off the table of the last restaurant you were in, stick it in a survival kit with the restaurant's crayons. You don't have to spend money, but you can have that little coloring book might save you, that child's life, and the 20 other people who want to kill your whining baby because they're trying to bunker down somewhere. So it just,
right.
It really does.
That's right.
It really is. So it's like trying to design a house. You know, everybody don't want the same amenities, but you have to look at your family and don't cut anything out, you know, because you know, well, this is not essential. Because the one thing you cut out is going to be the one thing you need.
Right. That's so true.
I'd like to add to it.
Yes, sir.
You know, I believe that what both of you all said is absolutely true. But what I have found to be the very most important thing in my survival kit is my family, the unconditional love for my wife and my children are, number one, the first and the foremost, because it gives you something to live for, it gives you something to fight for, it gives you something to kill for if you need to. And then I have what I have to say, that the second most important thing is exactly what you said, not being emotional when it's time for disaster, to be an analytical thinker. And one of the tools that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has given to us or has shown us is this study of Dianetics. And that study of Dianetics helps you to learn how to separate your emotional or your reactive mind, and to separate that from your analytical mind and be able to use that analytical force, that analytical thought process to make things easier for you. So that's the only thing that I would like to add. You know, both of you are absolutely right. Go bags and shut-in kit lists and field kit lists, all of those things are going to prepare, you know, they should cater to you and what your particular situation. My situation in Kentucky is not the same situation as it would be for someone in New York City. They're two different things. They're two different areas. So you got to think about where you live, how many people are going to be with you, if there's anyone, whether you have to go or stay. You got to be able to decipher the go or no-go dynamic, find
right.
out which one. All of these things are going to come into play. And I wish we had enough time in a two-hour radio show to teach you all about that. But the best way for you to learn these things is to bring in the Nation of Islam Disaster Preparedness Task Force to your city. We don't charge you to come. The only thing we ask is that somebody get us there, and we got a place to lay our heads. We can even make our own bean soup. We got stuff in our go bags to do it. That's funny. Supposed to laugh.
Well, I thought that you said, you know, your family. I was thinking your wife was going to make yours, but go ahead with your
story. Oh, no. No. I know how to cook, too. So.
I would like to see it. I keep hearing about it.
Well,
I know, that's right. We always want to see these FOI talking about they know how to
cook. Don't worry about it. My stuff is verified. My stuff is verified.
I would like to self-verify. Cook for us, brother. Cook for us.
You know what? I will absolutely love to do that. I'm going to cook a lot of rice, a lot of potatoes, a lot of spaghetti.
I am not trying to change the teachers, okay? I am perfectly fine with the MGT running the kitchen.
But that sister can email us at careunitdetroit911@live.com and anyone else, and we will give you a list of ideas of things that are good for the go bag, even though your go bag is like your fingerprint. We can give you some ideas. So if you email us, I will email you back within 24 hot hours with some ideas that Brother Rudolph has put together of excellent things to put in your go bag. But I can't help but tag in with my brother William and say, bring the team to your town and let them put on the presentation. Because the first thing they do is assess your town, your region, your area, your city, your neighborhood. And each presentation is geared to your area. You're not going to get the New York presentation in Detroit. You're not going to get the Detroit presentation even in Pontiac. You're not going to get the Louisville presentation in anywhere else in Indiana. You know, everywhere is geared to your area. They do the research. They tell you what's going on in your neighborhood and how you can get out as safely as possible. But another thing I would suggest to anybody, whatever you get in your go bag, use it. Don't get a bag, put it in the closet, and don't pull it out till it's time. And you don't know how to use the stuff that's in the bag. You're going to have to practice. Because perfect practice ensures perfect performance without you being nervous and confused and clumsy. If you never open it, you won't know how to use it, family. You got to use it. And I used to do it with my children like a game. So if there was an emergency, if I called for the drill, they wouldn't have known the difference because they were so used to doing it for fun. Then when it came time to do it for real, they did it as an exercise. They were used to doing it. So, you know, do it with your family like a game.
Yes, ma'am. Okay, and we have one more question from Catherine. She wants to know, what are the symptoms of juvenile diabetes, and can we do a show on sickle cell?
Okay, yes, we could do a show on sickle cell, and Sister Michelle, if you would like to go first, and you could give your closing remarks, and because I'm just looking at the time.
Wow, yeah, I was looking at it too. I would first suggest to the dear sister to, you archive these shows, right, Sister Queen Aziza?
Yes, ma'am, they are archived, and the links that are present now are forever live. So if you click on the link about this show, it will play live from now to eternity.
Praise be to Allah. So I suggest to our sister, go back to last week's show. Brother Rudolph did an excellent, excellent presentation on juvenile diabetes, type 1 diabetes, and type 2 last week. And I would say play that because we don't have a lot of time. I would say play that, but in a future show we can definitely cover it again. But I would say go back, play last week's archive, and Brother Rudolph tore that up. Brother Rudolph, in the last 2 minutes, is there anything you want to say?
Oh, no, I just want to say, family, thank you for tuning in with us this week. And, yes, if you have suggestions on a show that you will bring a great significance to you, medical, whatever it is, get it to Sister Queen, and she'll pass it on to us, and we will make a show out of it so that we can, as a family, learn together and teach one another so that we can grow together. That's all I have. I thank everybody for tuning in. I thank my co-host for holding down. I thank the sponsors and the coordinator of the show for allowing us the time on your airspace. And, of course, I thank Almighty God Allah for blessing us with life, health, and strength to be here to be able to do it again. And until next week, if he spares life, health, and strength, then we will talk to you the same time, same place next week. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Okay. Any other closing remarks, Brother William?
Brother Rudolph said it all. I'd just like to say, assalamu alaikum.
Okay, all right. Well, I guess I'll use up y'all last 30 seconds. So I just want to say join us Thursday at 8 p.m. Central with Student Minister Stanley Muhammad and his wife, Sister Ruth. We're going to be doing part two of When Love Leaves Home, and we're talking about infidelity in marriage and how to avoid it and how to atone from it if it should happen to you. So may Allah continue to bless us all with the light of understanding. We leave you as we came before you in our nation's greeting words of peace. Assalamu alaikum. One nation, one love. Good night, y'all.